Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files. On today's show, the Taliban seize $6 million helicopters, U.S. helicopters, along with a bunch of U.S. military weapons as well. Intel community decides to turn around and point the finger at Joe Biden. Reports that the Taliban had been killing press families members from Germany, a press outlet from Germany, and beating up Americans on their way to airports. And finally, the Congress returns to Washington next week to vote on the infrastructure bill as well as this next budget.
The Taliban, they're the ones that you're negotiating with. I spoke on numerous occasions to the head of the Taliban, and we had a very strong conversation. I told him up front, I said, look, before we start, let me just tell you right now that if anything bad happens to Americans or anybody else, or if you ever come over to our land, we will hit you with a force that no country has ever been hit with before, a force so great that you won't even believe it. And your village, and we know where it is, and I named it, will be the first
Mr. President, I want to interrupt.
Dropped right there.
You said this to who?
Yeah.
Who did you... You said... To who?
To Mullah Baradar, who is probably the top person. Now, nobody really knows who the top person is, but I would say that's probably the top person, and it seems to be... that's the way it's rolling right now. But I had a very strong conversation. I also had a good conversation with him. We talked for a while after that. That was the primary point I was making, and he understood it. And I asked him, do you understand? He said, yes, I do understand.
Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files, another weekend special. I think it was very important to highlight that interview that Trump had with Hannity, that being the main focal point of just really two completely different worlds between the Trump administration and the Biden administration. There was definitely a fear of Donald Trump in the White House, whether it was the Rocket Man debacle with North Korea or it was some of these Middle Eastern terrorists. There was a fear of Donald Trump in office, and that's because that's how he used to handle things. He was able to speak in the language of some of these terrorist organizations. Some of these terrorist organizations, folks, and I want to get to this episode, I think it's very important because I think the media is dulling down this scenario. And a lot of people from America, they actually cannot see it from the perspective of somebody that is living in the Middle East or even see it from a third world perspective. Because we are so coddled here as a society, we do have, and when I say privilege, it's not white privilege, this privilege, it's the privilege of being an American. We have American privilege where we live in a very coddled society, extremely civil. We don't live like barbaric savages living in caves, beheading people for you know, showing a little bit of skin or mouthing off to the Taliban. We don't behead people for that. We don't stone them to death. So we don't have the same culture. Culturally, there's a difference. And why I'm getting to this point is Donald Trump, he was able to identify this with whether it was either him or whoever was in his administration. He was able to identify this and keep enemies at bay by literally just threatening them, saying, okay, well, I know, and I don't even know the name of that official that he was talking about from the Taliban, some top-ranking member of the Taliban. He said, we know where you grew up, we know where your family is, we know where your village is. Any sudden moves, anything crazy, we know where your family members, whatever intel he had, he let them know, we know they're here, and we can see where they are, we have satellite on them. Whatever you do, the first attack, the first bomb that will drop will be directly on your family. And I know, folks, it sounds extreme, it sounds inhumane coming from the United States. But in this case, I think we can use a little bit of strong arming like this right now in this scenario. And I'll explain why throughout the show. We don't even know actually how many people are in Afghanistan that are U.S. citizens. Now, the reports are going from anywhere. I've seen 15,000 and I've also seen 60,000. So I'm not really sure at this point. Then you have a bunch of Afghan I guess you would call them Afghan military members slash American sympathizers that are as well, you know, we're attempting to get them out of Afghanistan as well. But just to start off here, and once again, like I said, there's this huge difference. If you look at the Biden administration, it seems like even when you read the rhetoric that's coming from the administration, it's just like Obama all over again. There's no, not threats, but there's just no strong arming, strong manning. And that's the language that the Taliban, that's the language that Vladimir Putin, that's the language that Kim Jong-un and President Xi over in China. This is the language that world leaders that are not as civilized, I guess you would say, as America, not as first world country-y, for lack of a better term, that's the language that they use. So sometimes you need a leader that is going to come in hot and heavy like that and use that type of language as a deterrent for future attacks. And that's really what Donald Trump did. I mean, whether you like the guy or you didn't, you can't sit here and say foreign policy wasn't solid, because it was pretty good during his administration, especially considering the administration before him with Barack Obama. President Trump, probably one of the greatest, not achievements, but the biggest surprise of the administration actually was his foreign policy, surprisingly. He was able to, I mean, he walked into North Korea, which hasn't been done, I think, ever by a president in the United States. And if the last time it was done, it was probably at least 50 years ago. So there was a lot of foreign policy decisions made by the Trump administration that were pretty solid. And now where it's going to show, you see how stark the difference is between the two separate administrations, what that difference, and it's really not the figurehead, because President Biden's just a puppet. There's a bunch of people behind him running the administration right now. It is the people in the administration that make this big of a difference. So to start off, U.S. has, the Taliban has seized a bunch of U.S.-made weapons. I have a political article here. It's written by Paul McClary and Lee Hudson. So this kind of goes on. I'm going to show you a video after this, but it shows how much spending, how much money we spent over there in Afghanistan. More recently, in a three-year period between 2017 and 2019, the U.S. has shipped another 4,700 Humvees, 20,000 hand grenades, and thousands of small munitions and grenade launchers, according to a 2020 Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction report. So, Robert McGaw, principal at the Secretary Development Group, stated, and I quote, "The Taliban has considerable experience handling and using a wide array of U.S. manufactured weaponry, including heavy machine guns, mortars and howitzers, and Humvees. After all, they've been buying, pilfering, and seizing them from the Afghan forces for almost two decades." So they have, and this is really the liberal media is kind of trying to push this narrative that the Taliban doesn't know how to use American weapons, so it's okay that American weapons were seized. They're kind of trying to push this narrative. It's really weird right now. There's this story about a bunch of U.S. Blackhawks as well being seized, a bunch of crazy attack helicopters being seized as well, and they're trying to, you know, play this one out because they're liberals, they're biased on the left, that, oh, essentially these Blackhawks, they're unusable because they don't have anyone to fly the helicopters, and they don't have U.S.-made parts to, you know, replace these helicopters, so they're not really that usable, which I just find that to be absurd. Like, you're trying to tell me that the Taliban doesn't know how to utilize the black market. No one believes that. I mean, it's a load of crap. Anyone that comes from the real world, that's been on the streets, that understands how just real life work actually works out, how is it that we still continue to have a proliferation of organized crime in this country? Right? How is that continuing? How are gangs continuing? Gang violence, gang warfare. How is this all going on? How is there people still being able to racketeer and launder money? How is this all still being able to be done? It's because everyone always finds a way to work through the system, and you're trying to make it like the Taliban, who's beheading people, they don't know how to do the same thing. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. This is just playing on how ignorant the American people are with some of these reports coming out of these liberal news outlets. So like I said, Oh, this is more important here. So between, and this is probably the amount of weaponry, give or take, what they have in their possession right now, I would imagine, the Taliban, between April and July 2021 alone, the U.S. provided the Afghan fighting forces with over 1,000 2.75 rockets, 61,000 40-millimeter explosive rounds. That's serious. Of 900,000 rounds of 50 caliber ammunition and over 2 million 762 rounds. So 762 will be for an AK probably, if I had to guess. 900,000 rounds of 50 cal is probably for heavy machine guns on top of Humvees. The 61,000 40 millimeter explosive rounds must be for some sort of explosive or rocket, maybe shot out of a Humvee, or I'm not exactly sure. It's not good. So I have a clip coming straight from CNN showing all the seized weapons. Play clip two.
Row upon row of sophisticated assault rifles, boxes of pistols, ammunition, vision equipment. Videos posted by the Taliban online in recent days boast of what they say are their seizures of the assault rifles in the Afghan city of Herat. And at Kunduz Airport, armored Humvees by the dozen. Some mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles called MRAPs costing $500,000 apiece. Even a small drone. These are the potentially lethal spoils the Taliban are believed to have captured in recent days from defeated Afghan forces, weapons made in America, supplied by the U.S. to their fallen Afghan allies.
Okay, so actually just on the break there, I was looking up these 2.75 rockets. From what they look like, doesn't look good. It looks like a folding fin aerial rocket, a rocket that you would equip to a Black Hawk, or maybe can be shot freely, but it looks like it goes on an attack helicopter. And then the 40 millimeter explosive rounds essentially is just a grenade launcher, which also, I mean, it's nothing great as a grenade launcher. It looks, anyone that's played Call of Duty, they know what I'm talking about. That's generic, a grenade launcher. That's what it would be used for. Which actually may give reason why America actually is not so bullish to send people back in and level the region. They may actually be afraid a little bit of getting killed with their own weapons that they really just supplied the Taliban with. So America's been supplying, now we just supplied the Taliban with a full-on arsenal to attack us, as you can see in that video. And you know what was interesting is they didn't mention in the article, but it looked like they also had night vision goggles as well that they somehow confiscated from the Afghan military. So the Taliban, like I said, they seized these $6 million U.S. Black Hawks. This is the Daily Mail piece written by Tom Pyman. I have a picture here. If you could check it out, you could see that gentleman from the Taliban, or rather that sleazeball from the Taliban, right next to the U.S. Black Hawk with his flag. Who knows what it says? Something in Arabic. So videos on social media show that insurgents have been flying the Russian-made aircraft around, and there's another Russian-made aircraft that they have as well, around the Afghan city of Kandahar. More clips also show how the Taliban have additionally seized American-made Black Hawk helicopters. Fighters are unlikely, and this is the part that's hilarious, because in this article, if you look at the Daily Mail piece itself, I'm just reading kind of the summary, but then in the piece, it says something a little bit different than this. So, fighters are unlikely to possess the knowledge or expertise to fly or maintain the state-of-the-art aircraft, but it will cause embarrassment after the White House spent billions of dollars supplying the Afghan military. So, okay, when you get into these Black Hawks, the first thing is, part of the reason that the Taliban is going around door to door looking for Afghan military members is because they're looking for people that already were trained by the United States military how to fly these Black Hawks. The fact that they can already fly these Russian-made other choppers, they're not as impressive, obviously, as the American ones, shows that they do have experience probably flying. So they probably, the Taliban themselves, would be able to figure it out if they had to. The other thing is in these Black Hawks, from what I understand, they additionally have a database of all of the people that were trained on how to fly these Black Hawks. So what the Taliban does is they backlog, they say, okay, this is the name, and then they go and they try to find that person. Maybe they even know their location, know their house, maybe there's some sort of documents, and they're able to find the people that were trained by the U.S. military to fly the helicopters. So these helicopters are not useless. I think there may actually be a reason why. I mean, I could be completely wrong on this. Why the Biden administration is so hesitant to just kind of go in there and strong arm everybody. From what I have been reading, it shows that America, the American soldiers are just holding down the airport and that's it. They're not going and finding citizens, U.S. citizens, and bringing them to the airport. All they are doing is controlling the airport, defending it, and stabilizing it as some sort of choke point. But they're not going out there willingly to go get American citizens. And there's roadblocks set up by the Taliban stopping American citizens from getting to the airport. But I'll have more on that. So Taliban, they executed a journalist's family member. This is a Daily Caller article. It's written by Thomas Catanacci. So the Taliban executed the relative of a journalist and seriously harmed another after a door-to-door search for the reporter in Afghanistan. So they were searching for a reporter that was not there, but their family member was there in Afghanistan, and their family member was killed by the Taliban. The unnamed journalist who works for German state-owned broadcaster Deutsche Welle is one of several reporters that the Taliban have hunted in the aftermath of the Afghan government's collapse, the media outlet reported. The journalist is reportedly safe and currently living in Germany. The Taliban has raided the homes of at least three other Dutch Well journalists, according to the media outlet. Insurgents also reportedly kidnapped the employee of a Middle Eastern television network and killed the head of a radio station. So what it seems like right now in the media, and this is amazing. I mean, the cognitive dissonance from the left wing in this country is just, it's getting to the point where it is now reprehensible. It's disgusting. It's filthy. If you can go on Facebook, you can go on Twitter, and you can bitch and moan and complain about the Trump administration, some of your discontent with some of their governing actions, I just don't understand how you can justify this going on currently and not speak out about how terrible of a travesty, a human disgrace, a humanity disaster, really, of what is going on in Afghanistan. So now what we're doing in Afghanistan, the Taliban is killing reporters. So who's to say that soon, I mean, you have 15,000, like I said, reports, 15,000 to around, from what I've read, the highest being 60,000 Americans over in Afghanistan. Who is to say that the Taliban isn't just going to light them all up? I mean, they are the fighting force now. They're the power. They're the centralized power now in Afghanistan. So who is it that defends those citizens that aren't at the airport? Who's going to defend them right now? U.S. citizens. If U.S. citizens are killed en masse, the government, or rather the liberals that run our media institutions, aren't going to report on this. This is the only time I've ever even read of this story. And this story is on the Daily Caller, which is a right-wing, middle-leaning outlet. It seems like the left is very, very reluctant to criticize the Biden administration ever about anything, even something this terrible. I mean, I'm reading things about politicians getting together, talking about an investigation of the Biden administration. And I'm talking Democrat politicians. I mean, this is bad. This is, the optics on this are terrible. And apparently, you know, there's reports coming out as well that officials are hearing Biden and Kamala Harris fight each other in the White House, going back and forth, saying, "You're not pinning me this on me, Joe, this, that, and the other thing." Because usually when the president F's something up, vice president also has to take responsibility, and she does not want to go out in front of the press and the media and take any responsibility for this disaster. But yeah, to go on here. U.S. Intel, they warned Biden. This is tremendous. Washington Examiner piece is written by Jerry Dunleavy. So yes, you have the U.S. Intel now pointing their finger at Biden, saying, yes, we told him about all of this because he came out and said, oh, it was a lot worse than we expected. We didn't expect this takeover so quickly. I mean, I showed that clip last show in June 8th when he was saying, no, that's not going to happen. You have 300,000 strong on the Afghan fighting forces, which actually was a miscalculation as well. It's not 300,000 from what I've been reading. About 118,000 of that 300,000 are people that work in the police, and they were counting the police also as the fighting the Afghan forces. as well, which is very weird. And then that also was accountable for, I think that number was something like a couple years ago, and it's not the same because people have passed or people have left the Afghan fighting forces as well. So that's an incorrect number that was being propagated by the media and propagated by Joe Biden as well. So U.S. Intel warned Joe Biden, like I said, Washington Examiner piece. So you have a senior intelligence official told the Washington Examiner that, and I'm quoting, "We have noted the troubling trend lines in Afghanistan for some time now, with the Taliban at its strongest militarily since 2001. Strategically, a rapid Taliban takeover was always a possibility. The question all along was whether the Afghan government and military would be cohesive enough and have the willpower needed to exercise its military capabilities to resist the Taliban. As the Taliban advanced, they ultimately met with little resistance. We have always clear-eyed that this was possible, and tactical conditions on the ground can often evolve quickly," end quote. So you have senior intelligence officials coming out now, speaking to the Washington Examiner, and there's other ones other than this one here specifically, saying we let the Biden administration know this was going on, and they just took all of our intelligence that we gathered and gave to them, and they said, "Oh, we don't care. We want a symbolic pullout of Afghanistan, and we want it on August 31st. We want it even before 9/11 because it's symbolic. It'll make us look great on paper." Just kind of like how the Obama administration killed Osama bin Laden. It'll be something we can now brag about in the future. And it blew up in their face in this case. And I thought that was very interesting. So you're telling me the military now, the Taliban, they're stronger now since they've ever been since 2001. So they're stronger now than they've ever been in 20 years. So they're very powerful right now. They have a lot of influence in the region. So the outlet also reported on June 23rd that the intelligence community concluded the week prior to the end the outlet. I think they were talking about like the Washington Post. Yeah, the Washington Post. So that the intelligence community concluded the week prior that the Afghan government would collapse within 6 months after the U.S. military withdrawal. Yeah, so this is going to kind of go on, this piece. And it's going to talk about how everyone was saying that this was going to happen. Like, even open source media outlets were saying that this was going to happen. This was inevitable. The Washington Post reported on August 10th, the U.S. military assessed a collapse could occur within 90 days, while others said it could be a month. ABC News reported on August 12th, a new military analysis warned Kabul could be isolated within 30 to 60 days and could fall within 90 days. It fell Sunday. And this is CIA Director William Burns saying this in July. I think it was July 22nd he said this. And I quote, "The trend lines that all of us see today are certainly troubling. The Taliban are making significant military advancements. They're probably in the strongest military position that they've been in since 2001. So you have this guy talking about this more than 2 weeks ago, really. 3 weeks before this happened, saying, yeah, this is some very troubling things that we're seeing here. The Taliban is getting extremely powerful. They've been more powerful than ever before since 2001. And once again, this is the CIA director. And I'm not like the guy that loves the intelligence community here, but we always make it like WMDs that were in the Middle East. Then we find out, hey, look, there was no WMDs. They were lying about it. Like, we're talking about the IC, the intelligence community, who's always been defended so vehemently by the left wing. They love the intelligence community, and it seems like the Biden administration just didn't listen to the intelligence community here in this case. So the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction released a report on July 30th that said the Afghan news was bleak and assessed that the overall trend is clearly unfavorable to the Afghan government, which could face an existential crisis if it isn't addressed and reversed. The report noted, U.S. military contractors are also being withdrawn from Afghanistan and warned their loss could significantly impact the sustainability of Afghanistan, in particular their ability to maintain aircrafts and vehicles. Okay. I mean, so you had so many news outlets, and this is really the most important part now. You had all this information. It was open source info, intel. You had people saying stuff in July 22nd, directors of CIA. You had was this July 30th, another source, this was 2 weeks before Kabul fell to the Taliban, all these reports were coming out. And did you hear this on the media? Not really. You didn't hear it from the media. You heard it from the intelligence community, but it wasn't being covered by the mainstream media. And why is it that the legacy media class didn't cover this? It's because it looked bad. It reflected poorly on the Biden administration. And now that's why everyone was saying, and once again, I've been covering this, like I said, for probably the last 2-3 months now. Every single report that I read was from right-leaning sources. I think one of them was 1945, and then the other one was, I think, Daily Caller, and then maybe American Military News. Those were the three different articles that I've read about how the Taliban was continuing to gain influence over the past, like, 3 months. Nothing was left-wing. The left-wing doesn't want you to know about anything negative that the administration is doing. Everything is a core positive, so they don't want to let you know about a possible regime overthrow in the Middle East because it poorly reflects on the administration, on the establishment right now. And that's really what the problem is. We have a very biased media. I mean, everybody knows this. We harp on this all the time on this show. So Americans not getting, you know what, actually, I'll play this clip and this one, oh, this one's great. So I got John Kirby here. He's asked some questions about how the evacuation effort is going thus far. Numbers-wise, he has no idea what's going on. And at the very end, just check out what he has to say about when they ask him, how many Americans do you estimate are in Afghanistan at this time? Play clip 7.
Please, one at a time.
But I mean, this is confusing. How many people has the U.S. government flown out on U.S. military planes? Because 7,000, if you're including other countries, if you're including civilian flights, that seems like you're playing with
the giving numbers. You the total number of people that we have helped evacuate since the 14th, and it's not all just Americans. There have been some of our allies and partners that have gone out, and we're giving you U.S. government flights. That's not counting people who are still getting out commercially or on charter flights. Okay? Does that clear that up? We get, and understandably so, here at the Pentagon, we're fixated on the tails that we own, but it's not the only way out of Kabul right now. As the general brief, the commercial side is open. There's limited. It's not as robust as what we can do on the military side, but people are still getting out that way.
Is there a breakdown of those numbers, the 7,000, saying this is U.S., this is Afghan?
I do not have a breakdown. I suspect that over time, as our manifesting process gets more refined, we may be able to be there, but we don't have that specific breakdown.
Today, how many Americans, American citizens remain in Afghanistan?
I don't know.
So
he doesn't know. If you hear that at the very end, you got the reporter asking him the question. So how many Americans remain right now in Afghanistan, American citizens? And he goes, I don't know. So they don't know how many Americans remain. They don't know the breakdown of the composition of people that are coming to the United States or the people that we're evacuating. We don't know how many are being evacuated. So this is great. I mean, this is amazing. So we have no idea really what even is going on. So what we have to hope for now is that the media isn't dishonest and they actually report what we're supposed to know, because it's not like the government's going to help us in that regard at all. So Americans not getting priority in Afghanistan, that's why I played this clip, is you would think, right, if we have U.S. government here trying to evacuate and you have U.S. citizens, would they be getting priority? That is not the case. American citizens are not getting priority. You would think you would go, okay, so we're going to evacuate 100% American citizens until we run out of American citizens. That's not the case right now. What they're doing is they're kind of mixing it up. We don't really know who they are evacuating, who they're not evacuating. So there may be certain people that are getting priority, as in Afghanis that were, you know, U.S. sympathizers or what have you. Or there's actually a really huge, serious problem with the way in which they're doing this evacuation system right now, and I'll get to it. Some of these visas that they're handing out in the State Department, they look like total imbeciles once again. So Eric Mackey wrote this. State Department and Department of Defense joint statement that they came out with, they stated, and I quote, "Over the next 48 hours, we will have expanded our security presence to nearly 6,000 troops with a mission focused solely on facilitating these efforts, and will be taking over air traffic control. Monday and over the coming days, we will be transferring out the country thousands of American citizens who have been resident in Afghanistan, as well as locally employed staff of the U.S. mission in Kabul, and their families and other particularly vulnerable Afghan nationals. And we will accelerate the evacuation of thousands of Afghans eligible for U.S. special immigrant visas, nearly 2,000 of whom have already arrived in the United States over the past 2 weeks, for all categories Afghans who have cleared security screening will continue to be transferred directly to the United States, and we will find additional locations for those yet to be screened. End quote. So I'll tell you what the real problem is with this special visa program. State Department, in order to get visas to Americans as well as Afghanis, friendly Afghanis, U.S. sympathizing Afghanis that helped us out in the war effort, they sent it via email. And they sent it with no number attached to it, with no serial number. So what happened is you have Afghanis just printing out hundreds of them and just handing them over to everybody. So now we're getting people put into the country that are going to be evacuated, muddying up the entire process here. They're going to be evacuating people that we don't know as verified, trusted people to come to the United States. This can be another effort to get more Taliban into the United States more than anything. So I have this clip as an example. This guy calls in, I think he's on ABC News Prime, and he explains the process of how the State Department just decided to send him a visa with no serial number on it, and people are just printing them by the hundreds and going to the airport looking to come to the United States. Play clip 4.
So this morning at around 9 a.m., I received an email from the U.S. Embassy Consular Services Department, and they said, we have created a document to help, American citizens and like eligible SIV recipients and applicants get to the airport. And it is this document. I printed it just for you guys. Okay. This looks like a U.S. visa. Okay. So for those of you who aren't familiar, if you get a U.S. visa, an immigrant visa in your passport, this is what it looks like. But this document has no name. It's not addressed to anyone. There's no serial number, okay, at the bottom. There's no barcode. So thousands of Afghans received this. Basically, everyone who had applied for SIV, these special immigrant visas for the Afghan translators and other people, they received this email. And what do you think happened when these people received an email like this, a document like this, that has no name? Of course, they printed out 100 copies. Even the Taliban can't control, 2,000 or 3,000 people at the Camp Sullivan Gate, when you have tens of thousands of Afghans who now have this kind of ridiculous, bogus document that the State Department created. I mean,
it's clear that there was no contingency plan in this at all. There was no planning. They didn't know what was going on in the Biden administration, so they did the kind of quick patch-up effort. If anybody's ever seen that meme, I forget the name of it. It's this specialized tape that the guy takes and he throws it on a tank with a giant hole on it. He smacks it to the water tank. This is really it's that type of method, just to slap some duct tape on it and we'll see what happens type of effort. There was no critical thinking into this. So now we may have an evacuation effort that's prolonged much longer than we thought it would be, which it's going to be much longer than the Biden administration is leading us to believe. They're saying it's going to be something like 2 weeks. You have people that are dissenting to that opinion. So I have an article here from the Federalist, and you actually have CNN reporters that are the ones reporting on it's not going to be 2 weeks. It's going to be much longer. I'm here on the ground right now. Yeah, I think her name, I forget her name. She's the one wearing the hijab in the very last podcast. And she was saying that everybody's so friendly there, but they're saying death to America. She's that one, that reporter. She's saying it's a disaster on the ground. People, she's been there for 8 hours. She hasn't seen one flight leave yet. These evacuation efforts just are non-existent right now. No one's leaving. It's hard for them to secure it. It's a total chaotic situation, really. So once again, The Federalist, written by John Daniel Davidson. Americans trapped in Kabul right now are saying that It's not as secure as the Biden administration is leading everyone to believe. A deluge of news reports coming in from Afghanistan indicate it's almost impossible to get into the Kabul airport, even for Americans and Afghans with special immigrant visas. There have even been reports for days now that some Americans have been beaten at Taliban checkpoints, and that contrary to Biden's claims, showing a U.S. passport doesn't guarantee anyone passage to the airport. Even those who can get to the airport can't get past the gates because the entire area is in chaos. David Fox, an American man trapped in Kabul with his Afghan wife and son, and that was the guy in the video I just showed you, his name's David, he told ABC News that when he arrived at the airport perimeter, there were perhaps 1,000 people, mostly Afghans, trying to get in. U.S. Marines were firing warning shots into the air and throwing flashbang grenades to keep the crowd at bay. So just think, when you shoot warning shots in the air to begin with, those rounds have to come down at some point. They don't just continue going upwards. They come down. Whatever trajectory they come down at, they could be killing people, depending on what location they land in. So asked whether he would authorize U.S. troops to go out into Kabul to get Americans who are unable to get to the airport or who are trapped behind Taliban checkpoints, Biden said, and I quote, "We know of no circumstance where American citizens have not been able to get to the airport," end quote, and claimed that U.S. officials are in, and I quote, "close contact with the Taliban," and that essentially everything is going swimmingly. So this is what they're going to tell us. They're going to tell us everything's going fine. There's no problems right now. The Taliban. And here's what the real question is, right? You are relying. What the United States government right now is doing, they're not relying. They're not putting things in their own hands. They're not sending military. Military's only holding down the airport. So they're relying on the good faith of the Taliban allowing American citizens to pass their checkpoints without beheading them, killing them, or beating them. We're just going to hope that there's a good faith effort from the Taliban allowing Americans into the airport. And the real question is, why is that the Taliban has checkpoints set up anyway? And that's really what it is. It's to probably attack Americans, I would imagine. What would be the point of setting up these checkpoints otherwise? Okay, so it goes on, this article. But we all know this isn't true. And we also know that other countries are sending troops out into Kabul to rescue their stranded citizens and bring them to the airport. The United Kingdom this week deployed 900 elite paratroopers into Kabul to rescue some 4,000 UK nationals in the city. The soldiers were reportedly told to expect combat with Taliban fighters. So why is it that the UK is sending their elite fighting forces, 900 elite paratroopers, to retrieve 4,000 UK nationals, and they're being told, hey, listen, you guys are getting sent in there, and you may have go to war. You guys may have a combat or a gunfight with the Taliban, and they only have 4,000 people there that they're going to rescue. We have at least 15,000 to maybe 60,000. We don't even really know the numbers at this point. State Department comes out, they say they don't know. The Pentagon comes out, they don't know. No one knows how many American citizens are there, and we're saying, "Oh, don't worry. We'll hold down the airport. Just make sure you get here. Try to make your way through some of these Taliban checkpoints and see what happens. Hopefully you make it here." I mean, this is unbelievable. This is like the greatest. I thought we had the greatest military in the world, right? We have the greatest fighting force in the world. Why don't you deploy them? And this has nothing to do with the guys that are on the ground. Like, I'm sure that, you know, the rank and file Marines or whoever it would be that would get deployed in this scenario, I'm sure they're not the ones. They're probably itching to get out there. I'm sure this is coming straight from the top. This is coming from that dude Tilly. This is coming from Lloyd Austin. This is coming from the administration. They don't want any conflict. I think this is extremely, to me, this is very weird. It's like you're setting up Americans to get killed in Afghanistan right now. So inside the airport perimeter, conditions are deteriorating, and this is the woman I was talking about before, CNN's Clarissa Ward, who has been reporting from the airport, said yesterday that in an 8-hour span, not a single U.S. evacuation flight had left. The situation she describes is harrowing. Thousands of people, Afghans and Americans, and dozens of other nationalities have gotten into the airport compound, but there is no process or system in place to get people on flights or provide basic necessities for the people who are waiting. What she describes is utter chaos. So, if you want to see, there's videos on this, and once again, everything I refer to, it will be in the description below under show notes, so you can see these videos. I mean, it's just really just terrible stuff, and it's a video of her just reporting, or rather, she has a phone call into CNN, and she talks to them and saying, pretty much, I've been here for 8 hours, nothing's going on, there's no set system, there's no refined system in place here, and it's just chaos. And this is going to be under evacuation plans aren't going so well. The Federalist piece that I have here, if you want to see some of those videos. They were long. They're about, you know, three. There's two videos. They're each 3 minutes long. You know, but so, like I said, so Lloyd Austin now, the Secretary of Defense, who admitted a couple days ago that they can't figure out how to escort U.S. citizens to the airport. They don't know how to set up a motorcade with military. I mean, I was watching Dan Bongino. Dan Bongino, folks, I don't know if you checked him, what would it be, Saturday? So he probably already had a show by now, but he probably just wrecked them on this. So you're telling me, as the Department of Defense, you're the Secretary of Defense, you run the military, you don't know how to set up a motorcade? Then what are you even doing in the position? What are you guys doing over there? You don't know how to secure something and get people from the extraction point from point A to point B? You can't do that as a military, as the secretary, the defense secretary. You can't figure that out, then you should no longer be in the position. At this point, folks, we're talking about everybody's talking about impeaching Biden, impeach Biden. We need to get rid of everybody. I mean, this needs to be cleaning house. This is a huge failure, and the incompetency has been exacerbated as this failure has continued to transpire here. It's become more obvious how inept the administration is right now. So you have the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. He told lawmakers Friday that Americans trying to leave Afghanistan have been beaten by Taliban fighters, according to several people who participated in a briefing call with Austin and other top officials. Austin's remarks to House members appear to directly contradict President Joe Biden's assessment from minutes earlier, in which Biden said the U.S. was not aware of Americans having trouble getting through Taliban checkpoints and to the airport in Kabul, the only evacuation point in the country that is not controlled by the Taliban. So that's great. So, yeah, so the Biden administration's lying, and then you have this guy, Lloyd Austin, speaking with other officials, telling them, yeah, people are getting beat up on the checkpoints. We don't even know. If you think that the Taliban, all they're doing is just beating people up at checkpoints, if they're laying hands on Americans at checkpoints, I'm sure they're probably doing more than just a simple, you know, little scuffle up or what have you. So already, at least four Democrat-led congressional committees have vowed to hold hearings and investigate the Biden administration's execution of the pullout, which has drawn bipartisan condemnation. So you have four different Democrat-led congressional committees, and we'll see what ends up happening here if they follow through with this. Depending on how the situation plays out, they're going to hold hearings and start investigating the Biden administration on their not only their execution of the pullout, but really just them getting information from the intelligence community and not using any of it, just disregarding it. So McCarthy is in Kent. What's his name? McCarthy, Mike McCarthy from the House of Representatives. He pressed Lloyd Austin on reopening Bagram Air Base, which was long the beating heart of the U.S. war effort there, but was shut down and abandoned earlier this year as the U.S. accelerated its pullout. Bagram has two runways to Kabul's one runway, which could help accelerate the evacuations of Americans and Afghan allies alike from the country. So this is what ended up happening in this case. I think Mark Milley came out and he was like, oh, well, if we had enough time, maybe we'd be able to do it. I mean, the answers that these guys are giving, it's like just complete incompetence. Like, you guys weren't even thinking about this. You guys shut down a Bagram Air Base for no reason. You said we're pulling out, and you just shut down the entire airbase, which the U.S. had secured, right, in the area. In this case now, we have a contingency here. We have a serious disaster on our hands, and we have no answer because we shut down the airbase. I mean, how many stupid things can be done at once? It's not the problem isn't the fact that we pulled out of Afghanistan, and I want to make this clear because the leftists they don't know how to handle this. They're like, well, Donald Trump said that this was Donald Trump's idea. This wasn't President Biden's idea, and then Biden kind of just adopted that. He couldn't do anything about it. And President Biden, day one, walked in and he did 33 executive orders like the first week in his administration. If he wanted to, he could have retracted this idea. It's not the problem is not pulling out of Afghanistan. It was the method, the way in which it was done, was entirely incorrect and wrong. How are you going to pull out the military before you pull out the U.S. citizens and these Afghan interpreters? How are you going to pull out the entire military before pulling any of them out? It should have been a very coordinated measure where you had all the U.S. citizens come out first and then slowly roll back the military. That would make the most sense considering the military is the defense, the security force. I mean, I don't know how I am like just a normal dude. I don't know how I know this. And the military, I mean, the administration doesn't know simple things like this. So it's like dudes that have never been in a street fight before. They have no idea what they're looking at. It's unbelievable. So you got Mark Lamont Hill never missing an opportunity to blame white people for a crisis. The master of grifting, play clip 9.
But this isn't about Clarissa Ward. This is about the way in which the hijab is being used as a political tool, first to demonize Islam, to make Islam look more oppressive and repressive than any other religion or culture in the world. It's also being used as a tool to justify American imperialism. There has been a consistent narrative from the West, particularly these United States since 9/11, to suggest that the reason we're invading countries, the reason we're plundering, the reason we're bombing, the reason we're exploiting is to save the women. Look at what they have to wear on their heads. They have no agency. They have no freedom. And we're going to fix that right now. One, it's dishonest and disingenuous because there are women in Saudi Arabia who are being exploited. There are women in Saudi Arabia who are being denied human rights, and we say nothing. Why? Because we want oil and weapons. But somehow when it comes to Afghanistan, we suddenly get outraged. We suddenly have morals and ethics. America doesn't have feelings. It has interests. And right now, it has an interest in making you believe that their imperial theft and plunder is part of an attempt of white men to save brown women from brown men. And it's all a complete lie. Do not buy into the theatrics of hijab and burqas and khimars and all of that stuff. No, 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 no. This is about good old-fashioned colonialism.
So there you go, Mark Lamont Hill. Anybody that's unfamiliar with him, he's like the biggest race baiter in politics today. How is he? His responses to everything become vapid after a while, and you ask me why is that? Why has he become so mundane, lacking originality, trite? It's because he continues to talk about the same thing over it. No matter what the position is, it's always, oh, the white man is trying to manipulate something. Okay, so in the Middle East, we know for the most part in some of the cultures and some of these countries, women don't have the same rights that they do in the United States of America. So he says, because we know that, and this is the truth, that is true. That's not an incorrect statement that I made, right? Because we know that, the white man is using it for imperialism. You're talking about imperialism as our military is being pulled out right now of Afghanistan to a point where we're not even defending our own citizens anymore. We don't even care about our own citizens. How is that imperialist? It's like the opposite of imperialist. I don't even want to call it isolationist, because at least isolationist, if you get attacked, at least you respond and you do something back. In this case, we're getting attacked and everyone's just putting their hands up and walking away. I don't even know if there's a word to describe that. It's feudalistic, really. We're just looking to go out there and die and lose. The other thing he said is America doesn't have feelings, they have interests. Yeah, America doesn't have feelings. America does have interests. I don't understand what the point of making that is. I just really don't know. Yeah, maybe America's a little nicer to Saudi Arabia for certain reasons. There's a lot of trade that goes on between. There's some oil as well, along with the fact that they don't always start war with us. They're not attacking us all of the time. They're not shooting rockets at us. So there is a, yes, there is a difference, because Saudi Arabia is not as, you know, I guess Afghanistan is much more, or rather Saudi Arabia is a milder version than Afghanistan. And then you also don't have Iran. They're not Iran, where Iran is constantly shooting missiles at some of our allies. I mean, it's totally different scenarios. What Mark Lamont Hill does is he gets to the very end. He does what the classic lib far leftist does. And he gets to the very end of the story, and then he kind of doesn't explain everything, the base or the fundamental values in the very beginning of the story, and he just draws conclusions based on the very end of the story, which doesn't really surprise me. This guy takes any opportunity to talk about race and race bait as much as he can. He's blaming right now, I mean, this is like crazy to think about. He's blaming Americans for the fact that Clarissa, whatever her name is, the CNN reporter, has to wear a hijab outside when the Taliban controls Afghanistan. I don't know how that's Americans' problem, or else she would get, whether it's beaten, raped, beheaded, what have you, whatever the repercussions would be. I don't know how that's American imperialism. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So I have this article, I have another clip from Jamaica, and I thought this was interesting. A Jamaican embassy, or U.S. embassy in Jamaica, took down the Jamaican flag so they can put up the gay pride flag. And Jamaicans are up in arms about it. They're outside. They're protesting because it's against their culture. And it's really just it's disrespectful to take down the Jamaican flag to put up the pride flag. Play clip 8.
As you might be able to see in the background, the U.S. Embassy continues to fly the LGBT flag, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender flag, in breach of the Vienna Convention, Articles 3.1e, Article 20, and Article 41, right? They are being hostile towards our laws, our culture, and our own democratic system. Instead of flying the Jamaican flag for emancipation, they have decided to fly that flag, and that is an insult to our country.
Philippa Davies, advocacy officer for the Jamaica Coalition for a Healthy Society, says the flag represents life practices that threatens the Jamaican culture and the teachings of the Bible. She says it also affects the health of the society.
You have to understand what that multicolor flag represents. It represents normalizing perverse sexual behaviors and lifestyle choices, behaviors and lifestyles that lead to disease and death. Our Christian duty is to speak the truth in love.
Yes, yeah, so I don't see anything controversial about this. I'm more old school, I'm more traditional myself. But when it comes to, if you want to marry, I don't think it's the job of the state to determine what is and what isn't a marriage to begin with. You shouldn't have to like go and be justified and legitimized by a state entity whether you're married or not. But that's the way, unfortunately, our system works. The position that I would take on this is the fact that the embassy has to have a gay pride flag out is a joke. It's stupid. It does not represent the country. It's not representative of the country. It's not even agreed upon consensus-wise if you voted across the nation. I would like to think there's at least, I would say it's probably a 60-40 or a 50-50 split on people that agree with the flag being at an embassy of ours. It's also extremely disrespectful to the culture that's in that region. It's, and they know, because Jamaica, the Jamaican government isn't going to go after them. They don't have people like, you know, extremist groups or the Taliban. Like, for example, I bet you that U.S. embassy that was in Afghanistan, I'm sure that one probably didn't have a gay pride flag on that embassy. I'm 100% sure of that, you know. So it's just really just being unknowing, I guess, of the culture. I don't know. It's just being really deaf, honestly. And this now makes me want to kind of move to Jamaica. I mean, I already tweeted this earlier today, and I said, or earlier yesterday, I said, man, whichever state secedes first from the Union, that's like where I'm going to move to, I guess. I don't really know what else to do. I don't really know what else to do at this point. It's like whatever state gives me the most or allows me to practice my freedom. Because the state doesn't give you freedom. You have freedom endowed to you by your creator, by the Lord. whichever one allows me to actually practice my freedom without being in prison, that's probably where I'm going to end up going. Hopefully, I'm hoping for a secession, maybe down south somewhere, whether it's Florida or Texas or Mississippi or Missouri, what have you. But that's where I'm looking to probably go if there's a secession from the Union. I'd greatly appreciate it if somebody could get that done for me. So I got some quick headlines here. Congress to come back on Monday to discuss spending. So yeah, you're going to have Congress coming back on Monday. They're going to talk about the infrastructure bill. They're going to talk about the budget as well. The budget has some crazy far leftist nonsense in it. It's probably going to go through the, I think they call it the Secretariat or the Pro, yeah, the Secretariat or something. Or the Parliamentarian. Person that's arbitrator and reads through and says, is this good for a budget? Is this not? There's a bunch of super far left wing wish list stuff on that. So just keep in mind on that. Massive nurse shortage in Houston after 150 unvaccinated workers have been fired. I actually want to go over this just real quick. Foundation of Economic Education. I think this is very interesting, this story. So you had 150 workers from a Houston hospital were fired on the spot because they didn't want to get vaccinated through their employer. Their employer is now mandating vaccine. I think this is actually a serious problem because we're going to see this in hospitals. This will eventually go further along the line and people working construction will be required to get a vaccine and you'll lose your job otherwise. So I actually see a huge labor shortage in the future if this continues to go the way it is, because I think that there's a lot of people that are willing to die on this hill. Me personally being one of them, I am willing to die on this hill. I'm willing to get fired over this. I will collect unemployment. Gladly, I will collect unemployment and will bull every single dollar that I have extra straight into Bitcoin. That's what I'm going to do. That will be my silent protest. And then maybe, you know, I'll do something else after that. You know, maybe I'll find another job that doesn't require me to have a vaccination, but I am not bending the knee on this one bit. And if you folks are in that, I'm not going to tell you how to live your life, but if you're in that situation where you don't have anyone that really relies on you and you have like a good savings in the bank account, I would not blame you yourself to not bend the knee on this one and take a stand. I think that more than anything now is the time to take a stand, especially on this, because now if we're allowing the state to tell us we have to get vaccinated for a vaccine, I mean, for rather a virus that only kills percent. If you're under the age of 70, your chances of survival are 99.96%. Therefore, it's like four out of every 1,000 people that get it under the age of 70, 4 out of every 1,000 pass away under the age of 70. Those are the numbers right now. Under the age of 70, as you get lower in age, younger population is even more immune to this. They will get sick, they will not die, then you have natural immunity. Whereas with what's going on with some of these Pfizer vaccines, they're saying over in Israel, as the studies continue, they're getting outbreaks because they're losing their efficacy over 6 months. After 6 months are over, now they're talking about booster shot. I mean, how much longer? How many booster shots are you going to keep getting a booster shot? And you don't even know the side effects of this thing. I mean, this is unbelievable that this is even going on. But we could see this in the future. We could see a bunch of mass firings or layoffs and then a real worker shortage. I think the only reason they don't go forward with this, they're trying to do these focus group tests. They're taking polls for this kind of stuff in the background, folks. That's what they're doing. They're trying to figure out whether they can implement it and not face the repercussions of having a worker shortage and crashing everything. And I'm not talking about crashing the stock market. I'm talking about crashing everything, like having a food shortage, no food supply, food isn't getting from one place to another, having a bunch of really bad implications that will cause death in the end. That's the reason why I think they have not actually mandated it yet, because people will be willing to get fired over this. And that will cause even a further worker shortage. And then a bunch of people will say, okay, I got laid off, I got fired, I'll take your unemployment. Thank you. Screw you, government. I paid into this my entire life. I never, ever in my life myself have taken unemployment. But if the government puts me out of a job, I will gladly sit on unemployment like other people have done their entire lives. So, just another update here. I saw some posts on Twitter. I can't verify the information, but they're saying the FDA may be approving the Pfizer vaccine within the next week or so. I'm not 100% sure on that. Don't quote me on it. But that's from what I've been reading. So authorities, they arrested Owen Schroyer on January 6th because he was there on January 6th. He is a host over at InfoWars. Nothing really crazy or substantial there, except the fact that, you know, the right is always held to a totally different standard than the left. I don't even think he was in the building at the time. I think he was on the steps of the Capitol building. So, mask debate in schools. I got this Washington Examiner piece. And like I said, again, the death rates of anybody that is under 17 years old, it's even lower. It's so minuscule that it's not even worth me mentioning. The death, it's anybody that is under the age of 17, their death rate is 0.06. So it's like 6 out of every 1,000 kids. It's very small from COVID. So they're going on. This Washington Examiner piece just talks about all the numbers, the different studies that came out, the Denmark study, and how they're continuing to fight over whether parents can parent their kid, really. This is the government trying to take hold of your children and parents fighting them for trying to do so. So Amazon lobbies against antitrust legislation. This is a post-millennial piece. I thought that was interesting. Not surprised. Amazon wants to create as much antitrust as they can, like what they did with Pollard by kicking them off the web servers. It's not surprising. They want to cut down any type of competition they have because they want to control the narrative. They want to control the power. They want to make more money than everybody else. They want to stifle any type of innovation that is against them or competition. It all makes sense, folks. So I greatly appreciate everybody tuning in as always. Enjoy your weekend. Please like, share, subscribe, drop the mic, let people know about the podcast. And I will see you folks all next time on Wednesday. Thank you.